Coming up, Facebook gobbles up Glancy, Twitter's better discovery tab, Huntsy for job searches, and our Instagram for video roundup. All that and leaving the internet for a year. Wait, who would do that? Up next on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 59, recorded Monday, May 7th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code SocialHour5. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm back in Canada, in Toronto. I'm a little bit, I don't want to say disoriented, Sarah, but I've been traveling a lot. So I just got back late last night, and it is nice to be home. But I do miss the beach, I have to say. I was spoiled for a few weeks, and now I am back to reality.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's funny. It's starting to heat up here in California, and it's like, because I'm not, when we're in the studio, it's nice and there's air conditioning and you're not very hot or cold or anything. And it's easy to forget that it actually gets very, very hot here in the summer. And I'm not the hugest fan of warm weather, Amber. I feel like you and I could trade places and you would be really, really happy with the weather here today.
I think you're right.
So we have a ton of news that we've been sort of just dumping into our receptacle of social over the last week. Some of it is brand new. Some of it is within the last week. That's sort of the fun thing about having the Social Hour weekly, is that so much stuff happens in the social space every week. We'll start with some Facebook news because they have been busy, as they do. The first story, this was from, I think it was last Thursday that they announced Facebook would be adding organ donor status to profile pages. Now, this doesn't mean that you're necessarily registered with any sort of a official organization like a DMV or another place where you can register online. It's more of just a, hey, I'm a donor. I want everyone that has access to my profile to see this. And in the event that there would be an occasion where somebody could possibly make use of my organs, I would have publicly said, yes, this is what I would have wanted on my Facebook profile. I went ahead and added myself as an organ donor, Amber, and I have to say it felt pretty good.
Yeah, I think this is just fantastic news coming out of Facebook. I remember, I think it was just last week when Mark Zuckerberg had announced that they're going to have some news that will really be life-changing for a lot of people. I couldn't even have imagined this was what it was, but very positive feedback about this. I think, I think this really is the future of different causes. The idea that there is an easy way for you to promote what you care about and what you support. I know for me, for instance, on my website, I redesigned it last year and I added a little causes tab on my website to talk about the things that I do support. And I think when we're out there and we kind of show people the things that we are behind, especially something as important as organ donation, I think it really makes the whole social experience that much richer and that much more important.
Exactly. The folks at Facebook have been very vocal saying, listen, this isn't, it's not sort of like a sign on a piece of paper, official anything. It's just awareness. And Obviously Facebook is a proven place where things do travel quickly. I have up on my profile here, I registered as an organ donor and I was able to go back and say, well, when did I first register as an organ donor? And I think it was when I first got my driver's license, when I turned 16. So that would have been, mid 90s. And I was able to say what was the reason that I became an organ donor. And I noticed a couple people that I went to high school with liked it because, I don't know, maybe they remember this or at least the date seems familiar to them. But, it felt good. And I guess it's just one more place for me to say, yes, this is it's important to me to be able to support thousands of people who need organs, and many of those people end up not getting them in time. I mean, it's part of the issue is that there aren't enough organ donors, and I think it has less to do with the fact that people don't want to be organ donors and more to do with the fact that they just never have that little sticker on their driver's license, or they never actually tell anybody that that would be something they would be interested in. And by law, you can't take the organs unless you have their permission.
You know, I think another great thing about this is that we often talk about social media changing the world. And so often there aren't that many great examples of companies doing this. You know, we hear about companies like Facebook, you know, buying Instagram for $1 billion and all this money going around and them caring about advertisers. And so I think, again, I just go back to the idea that this is where social media works really well. And this is where we have social media for social good. And I think, you know, hopefully more companies will step up and try to kind of follow suit. So good for them for doing this. Now, Sarah, we have other news from Facebook that is getting back into kind of their wheelhouse, so to speak, in terms of acquiring different services. We all know about Instagram. There has been an app also acquired, not as big as Instagram, but still an acquisition nonetheless, called Glancy. Now, Sarah, are you familiar with this app at all?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm familiar with it enough to know that I don't know if it's Glancy or is it like Glance, but they just have two E's on it. So yes, I'm familiar with the company because I remember thinking, how do you pronounce that word? It's one of those double letter startup words. But I went and looked for it on in the iTunes App Store and I couldn't find it. In fact, it's weird. When you search for Glancy, you get a lot of kind of romantic, you know, sort of borderline apps. And so I was like, what is the problem? Why can I not find this? It's because they've pulled their app from the App Store since their acquisition.
It took
me a while to put two and two together.
You know, I didn't know a lot about this app. I've heard about it, but hadn't had a chance to play with it. It's a little bit like Foursquare, but you're not checking in. The idea is you're instead finding out if you're at a specific location, if there are people around you who have similar interests. So that basically is how it works. I'm guessing maybe, you know, they pull it from the App Store. I always worry too with Facebook, with acquisitions like this, that it is just a talent acquisition. You know, they just want the people behind the app, maybe a bit of the technology, but they'll just kill it off. Who knows?
Yeah, it's weird. I know that people do compare Glancy to Highlight, which is another what is the word they use for these? It's almost like vague location apps or
ambient location.
Yes, ambient location.
Ambient location. I'm just looking at
people. Yeah, ambient location apps. Okay, so I guess that's a new term, which is it's not check-in based. It's more of a what you have in common with people who are also nearby you geographically based. And it's like, okay, well, Foursquare is definitely the leader in the space of check-in apps, although there are many apps that use check-in, you know, as a feature, if not the main feature. And Facebook, instead of buying Foursquare, which, gosh, I can't even remember now if they wanted to at any point, they have their own Facebook Places or check-in type of a service. It never really caught on enough to scare Foursquare, I don't think, too much. I still don't really use Facebook in that way. But you figure, well, Facebook wants the technology to have an ambient location type of a service within, you know, the Facebook experience. And Glancy was, you know, one of the contenders. And, you know, according to some people, Glancy is sort of more of a solid version of this ambient location if you want to compare it to Highlight. Highlight got a lot of attention at South by Southwest this year, which is why I keep bringing it up. I don't know how direct competitors they actually are. But yeah, Facebook does this. They just want smart people who can be engineers for them. And maybe they'd build Glancy into something at Facebook and maybe they wouldn't.
I don't know. I mean, and then you run into the issue that I think we've talked about before on the show and is also mentioned in this Read Write Web article, that when you're running an app like Glancy or Highlight in the background, it really drains your battery life. I hate that. I have enough problems with battery life as it is without worrying about an app that's running in the background. And I still cannot get past some of these location apps. I can't see a great use for them in my life. I feel about them kind of maybe the way that you feel about 3D movies, Sarah, which you explained before the show. You're just going to come out and say it. You know, you're just you're not buying it right now.
Yeah,
and
just not into it.
Not into it. And I think, you know, Foursquare kind of get, you know, when I was in Florida, I saw a lot of different restaurants who would have great Foursquare deals if you would check in, the coupons and all those type of things. But just knowing that people around me with similar interests, it just has that stalker quality. And I don't know. I cannot get past that. Hopefully anyone listening or watching the show, if you feel differently and you've used this, we would love to know because I'd love to open my mind to it. I there's like a roadblock right now.
I totally agree with you, Amber. I consider myself, not that shy of a person, relatively friendly. I mean, I like meeting people, but it's like there has to be at least one more degree of necessity than this person works, at a company and you have a friend in common and they might be in this coffee shop and here's what their profile picture is and maybe you'd like to go up and introduce yourself. I think that I might still not be social enough IRL to feel like, okay, it's now appropriate to basically pick up a conversation with a total stranger. And I'm not sure that I'd want to be approached in that way either, because it's just, it's a little bit just out of left field. We're not at a dinner party or some sort of a meetup where the whole point is to, you know, shake hands and meet new people. It's a little bit, I feel like participating in these services, it means that there's going to be that much more kind of like unsolicited, well, sort of solicited, but out of the blue conversations with people I don't know yet. That scares me a little bit.
And those are always awkward, right? Like, does that ever go well? You know, does anyone have a story out there about how an ambient location app or whatever they're called has really enhanced their life and, enriched an experience that they've had? Because I'm just not seeing those stories. But again, would love to hear them if anyone has them.
I would too. Write us, thesocialhour@twit.tv. If you're like, ambient location app saved my life, here's why. Or just made me a new friend or something. Or even a funny anecdote. We'd love to hear it. Mm. All right, moving on to Google Plus. Google and the Google Army, they're busy. They do not stop rolling out the announcements. This announcement just came through the wires this morning. Google Plus Hangouts on air. Broadcasting your conversation to the world. And you think, well, hold on, Google Hangouts, that's not new. What they've been doing with select accounts is allowing people to broadcast a Google Hangout to anybody, to anybody who wants to join, rather than, you know, to a group of friends or a certain amount of people. And they have decided to open that up to anybody who has a Google Plus account. At first, I thought, well, wait a second, how is that really that different than what they've been doing before? But the idea is that if you have some sort of a live event, I mean, Amber, if you and I, if this was a Google Hangout, let's say, rather than something that we were doing on Twit, we could send out a link, people could watch it, we could see real-time statistics of who's watching, people commenting, and I think it's more of that, let's open up Google Plus to a place where people who are serious about broadcasting live on a regular basis think of it as a tool rather than a Ustream competitor or any of the other services that let you stream yourself live.
Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but traditionally Google Plus Hangouts, although they're relatively new, it only allows up to 10 people to join that Hangout. So 10 people to participate it. With Hangouts on air, you're allowed to have those 10 people participate, but then you can invite sort of the outside world, provide them with a link to be able to watch the show. So
yeah.
I guess it just kind of takes Hangouts one step further. I haven't done a lot with Hangouts. I did write an article recently about three useful ways you could use Hangouts in your business. And I discovered chefhangouts.com, which was really interesting. A bunch of chefs who do these hangouts on a regular basis. It's kind of like the Twit model, but instead for cooking classes. And they charge for cooking classes, and they seem to be doing really well. So more and more, I think we're seeing hangouts. You know, there's just a really solid community there. And if you look at the links there that you put in the rundown in terms of upcoming hangouts, I was pretty impressed. You know, we have Conan O'Brien coming up on May 8th at 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Jamie Oliver, the New York Times. So they're really getting a lot of traction, I think, with some big names who are interested in doing the Hangouts on air.
Yeah, that's another thing that clearly the people at Google are spending a lot of time making sure that some of the biggest brands, of any accounts on Google Plus are participating in this. I mean, President Barack Obama, for example, pretty big name. Okay, you know, if he's going to be hosting a hangout, a lot of people in the world, well, certainly parts of the world would be interested in that. But yeah, other musicians and the photographer community, of course, very hot on Google Plus, and a variety of celebrities and sports figures and stuff. That's all, I guess, necessary, at least to spread awareness to people who might not be on Google Plus or feel like it's not really their scene. Clearly, mm-hmm. people who aren't necessarily geeks at all are participating, and so that'll help them along. I mean, it's always interesting for me to watch this sort of thing grow, because clearly we're in the business of doing live broadcasting. I mean, that's what we do. We do it in a very unique way. The TWiT model is not something that a lot of other people... Well, I mean, it's similar to what some other companies are doing, but not exactly the same. So this is always interesting to me, but I guess just from trial and error, I know how difficult it can also be. So I think, well, you know, that we'll see. We'll see how many regular Google Plus Hangouts end up becoming big deals. Then again, maybe Google Plus, maybe they don't care so much about reoccurring programs as much as they do about like a big speech or a concert or something that's like a one-off where you'd get a lot of people watching just once.
Now, Sarah, to watch a Google Plus Hangout, and like I said, I've participated in them before, but I am a member of Google Plus. Do you need to be a member of Google Plus to watch an on-air Hangout? Because that's a huge limitation for people, right?
I think the whole point of this is that it's to let all the people in who aren't on Google Plus, but I'm not quite sure. Chat room, please correct me if that's not true.
Let us know.
Because, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, wasn't it always letting people, anybody watch? Obviously, the participation is limited, but people joining is not limited. I think that might be the difference. Not Google Plus, but YouTube, which is, again, lines are blurred at Google. You've got YouTube, you've got Google Plus people, there's videos. You have to assume that they're all working together. But YouTube has publicly committed $200 million to promoting what they call their premium channels. So these are premium channels with, again, big names. We've got certain music artists, Jay-Z, the Neon Trees, actors, Julia Stiles, Virginia Madsen, Eric Schmidt, Google executive chairman. YouTube, through sort of informational event last Wednesday, to raise awareness that they are investing a lot of money into new channels. So that's advertising and promotion and that sort of thing across Google's content network to push these channels, which is, it's interesting because it's like, okay, well, YouTube is already now in the business of trying to get, trying to change their image from, hey, it's just whoever wants to upload whatever, you know, as long as it's not copyright infringement, we'll take it, to, well, we still do that, but we also do regular serious programming, original content, that sort of thing, too. Okay, we also do that. But now we also have these really cool people, and we're now going to be sort of a promotional machine as well, which is feeling very TV studio to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. Now, Sarah, when they're talking about premium channels, would something like Felicia Day's Is It Geek and Sundry?
Yes.
Would that fall under that category as well?
Yes, it would. It would.
Okay.
And I'm not exactly sure why, and the reason I know this is because YouTube has some of their premium channels listed, so that I know that they're involved in this. But I don't exactly know why some accounts become premium channels. I assume that is some deal that YouTube is making with independent artists or production studios that, you know, that they've hooked up with. But yeah, she is. So it's not just, I guess, traditional celebrities. But those lines are blurred too these days. I mean, who's a celebrity online? I mean, a lot of them never made it in that kind of traditional sense. So
there's a lot of crossover.
Right. It's interesting to me. I mean, I go, wow, 200 million. Gosh, to promote things? I mean, this is not even, they didn't even buy anything. They're just talking about sort of internal promotion. do they really need that? But then again, I didn't really know that Flo Rida had a YouTube account or had a premium channel. So maybe I do need to be promoted to a little bit more to raise awareness about that.
It's funny, you know, as you talk more about this, you're right, when you go from Google Plus Hangouts and you get into YouTube and you get into YouTube premium channels and all this discussion, and, you know, we're in this world all the time. You wonder how the average person keeps up or if they have any idea that such a thing even exists.
Right.
It seems a little bit confusing, but nonetheless, it's good for people, I suppose, who've made that leap into the premium channels and have those capabilities now. And I mean, YouTube has been great at doing this for a while. I think promoting specifically people who are YouTube stars within their own channels and giving them a platform. But you're right. It seems like they're trying to get that mainstream audience as well.
I've been looking at our chat room while we have moved on a little bit, just to kind of get some clarification on Google Plus. And everybody's confused. It's not just us. Seishi Zero says, Google needs to do a better job explaining this. It's confusing even after reading their help section. Well, it wouldn't be the first time that Google has confused me. Sometimes I feel like that for whatever reason, their ideas are good, but I still don't know how they work. Last week, Amber, and this is very off topic, and I'll complain about it briefly and then we'll move on. I tried to change my cover photo on my Google Plus profile page. That really shouldn't be that hard. And I can actually replicate it right now just to show you why I think that the wording is very strange on my Google Plus profile. So this is a cover photo I chose. Why did I choose that? I don't know, because I don't have any good photos on this computer. But let's say I want to change my cover photo, okay? Right? So I hover over it. I go ahead and say change. And then once I click on it, it's like, okay, well, my profile picture is weirdly gone. And now I just see delete photo. Well, I don't want to delete the photo. I just want to change it. It took me forever to realize that what you actually have to do is then just delete the photo, and then you get to start over. But the photo is now gone from my profile at all. It's not like it goes into a nice little cover photos album or something. If I wanted to switch it back, I'd have to start from scratch. Really weirdly worded. And it took me a couple of days and someone saying, oh, yeah, you got to delete the photo first, before I realized, oh, that's just... it's sort of bad UI. It's not that it's a bug. There's nothing really wrong with it. It just doesn't really make much sense. So, again, another example of Google being a little bit confusing with their wording.
Well, I had quickly just looked up an article about Google Plus Hangouts and the on-air functionality. And from what I can tell, because they keep using the word publicly, especially in articles in some of the larger newspapers, is that, yeah, it is that public ability so that anyone can watch a hangout, even if they're not a Google Plus member. So that's the way that I'm interpreting it. If I'm wrong, let us know. But I think, Sarah, that would make the most sense, right? If it was public. But like you said, with Hangouts, you just never know, because there's so many limitations. It's very structured in terms of how the Hangouts have worked to date. So to see them kind of open it up is obviously they're a little bit lost in translation.
Especially if they're going to start running ads. Little pop-ups or whatever on popular Hangouts. It's like it would be in Google's best interest to just let everybody watch that stuff and be advertised to, and Google gets a cut of that, rather than say, oh, you need a Google Plus account or you need to be logged in or something like that. Obviously, in a perfect world, it would be both, but they must know that that's not always the case and they would still want some of that ad money.
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. All right. Speaking of money, Sarah, a big buy last week, LinkedIn has spent $119 million on SlideShare, which many call the YouTube of slideshows. So I don't think this is a huge surprise for LinkedIn users. Again, I go back to my point, I think it was last week or the week before, that LinkedIn is kind of like that social network that keeps kind of growing organically. And this is just another example of them gobbling up a really cool service. And some people question, why is this too much money? After the billion-dollar acquisition of Instagram, $119 million.
All of a sudden, like, doesn't change, sound like much.
Right?
What a deal.
What a deal. They're so lucky. So lucky. I know. You know, I think before the billion-dollar acquisition, I think we would have looked at this and thought, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous, right? But now our scales have changed.
Well, so YouTube of slideshows. Are you a SlideShare user, Amber? Because I am only casually aware of what SlideShare is.
So I'm not a user as far as a creator. I do a lot of speaking, as you know, and I tend to use Keynote on my Mac for presentations. I use SlideShare in the sense that I actually view a lot of presentations that people have shared on SlideShare.
Got it.
And that's where I think the community is amazing, just that you can share and see all these phenomenal presentations that people have done, and they've opened them up to the public. So again, a wealth of content through SlideShare. And because it's generally speaking, you know, more business-oriented content, it seems like a great fit for LinkedIn.
Yeah, it does seem like a good fit, especially since LinkedIn wants very much to be a place that people are going to connect to each other, to get, you know, even career tips and updates that have to do with work and jobs. And it would seem like a natural place to say, oh, you know, Amber gave a presentation recently, and LinkedIn is kind of her professional area online, and that would maybe be a place where I could see some of that stuff if you had chosen to share. It's a cool idea. It definitely seems like a good fit for LinkedIn. Is it over $100 million worth? Who knows? But yeah, 119 doesn't sound like that much now to me.
No,
like,
it does not.
That's a tenth of Instagram. Wow.
Unbelievable. And I mean, if you look at as far as content, just based on this Mashable article, SlideShare hosts more than 7 million presentations. So you can imagine, you know, the wealth of information that's in there. It's like a library, an archive of every, you know, topic you could imagine that people have spoken on or presented on. So from that standpoint, and I think, again, I love the point you made about it tying back into your professional profile on LinkedIn. I'm sure this is something a lot of people would want to share and demonstrate that they have done SlideShare presentations and be able to kind of promote that through their LinkedIn profiles.
Exactly. Yeah, if I had any, I'd love to share them. I'm not much of a presentation person, which is probably going to end up being an issue because people keep asking me to speak and stuff, and I keep going, okay, I'll just wing it.
You know, the thing is, though, Sarah, once you get one presentation, sort of the framework, like I have one master presentation and I update it every time I speak. So I've probably done 120 keynotes over the past few years. And it literally started as one presentation and I just keep swapping out slides and updating it. So once you do that, it's the first one that's the hardest, right?
Yeah.
But then you can tweak it. But it's a good thing to have a deck in place so you know if you're going to speak, you can, like, sometimes I'll take 50 slides, I'll cut it down to 15 depending on the timing, and it's nice to have it. I'm just adding homework to your life.
No, it's good to know. That's actually very helpful for anybody who's trying to figure out how that all works. It makes sense, too, because you could say, all right, well, I've got this hour keynote here, and you go through it the first time or even the first handful of times and you're like, you know, there's sort of this dip here in the middle that it's just not working. So you kind of gauge the audience reaction or questions, or that seemed a little unclear. And so it gets better over time. So you don't always have to feel like you're starting from scratch.
Exactly. And I think one of the easiest ways to start a new presentation, at least in my experience, and it's taken me a few years to realize this, is to focus on something like a top 10 list. You know, oftentimes I'll talk about 10 strategies for success in social media. And once I can put that number to the slides and I know I need at least 10 slides, then I can start adding that filler, right? Yeah. The stories and the context and all that stuff. So having that number in place like you would with a blog post is really helpful to kind of start generating ideas for a presentation. There's my tutorial.
That's good. Good to know. I hope everyone's listening. We learned a little bit more about keynotes and the secrets behind Amber's success on this episode of The Social Hour. Speaking of The Social Hour, quick reminder that we record The Social Hour live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We'd love to have you watch us live, but don't worry if you can't, because you can find all of our content. Everything lives in perpetuity at twit.tv/TSH. That is our show archives, all of the notes to links, to stories, to companies that we reference and talk about here on The Social Hour when we have guests. All of their information lives on our episode pages at twit.tv/TSH. So don't worry if you can't watch us live or if you've missed a show. We make it very easy for you to keep up and catch up if you've missed a couple weeks. But again, thanks to everybody who does watch us live, because it is fun to have you chatting, to have you tweeting to us. We try our best to be absorbing all of that feedback as we go along. Of course, you can email us too at thesocialhour@twit.tv. So, Amber, we have more news. We have a cool social tip. We even have a spotlight, those Instagrams for videos that we talked about last week. We're going to talk about some of those. But first, we want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right. So I've talked about Squarespace quite a bit on The Social Hour before. I'm a Squarespace user. That's where I host my own blog. Squarespace is doing some new stuff, though. And I think this month in particular is a great month to get started. They give you a lot of incentives. Not only is it just a very, very easy UI for managing a website or a blog, but let's say you've got an idea, you're kind of ready to jump in. What Squarespace started doing is giving out free domains. So if you're an annual plan customer, that means you also get a domain you never have to pay for, you never have to worry about hosting it. That's something that Squarespace just does for you behind the scenes. Conveniently integrated, when you sign up, doesn't require any configuration. You just make a domain selection, and then the mapping is all done in the background. Some people think domain mapping is fun. Most people do not. You'll appreciate the fact that Squarespace is taking care of all of this for you. And then if you decide to cancel the service, that domain is still yours to keep. So it's not like Squarespace is going to like take it with them or hold it hostage or anything. So that is a really, really great new service that Squarespace is offering. Simplified subscription plans as well as some reduced pricing plans. So if you're like, I love Squarespace, everything about this is great, but their entry-level pricing plan is still just a little bit too high. Some of their standard plans, their standard plan specifically, starts as low as $8 a month. So it's a lot more reasonable depending on what you're looking for. Everybody who's familiar with Squarespace also knows that they have amazing templates to choose from where you can build your website off of. You can go nuts. I mean, if you're a designer, if you know code, if you want to make this your own, that's cool. But you really don't have to know any of that. It's good for experts and novices alike. They have Google's complete web font library. Over 300 fonts are now totally integrated. If you're a font nerd, that's going to be something that will excite you. Squarespace even has live webinar classes. So tutorials, online tutorials, very, very important in this day and age. No one's even going to be going to colleges in a few years. We're all just going to be sitting around learning everything. So Squarespace is on top of that, too. So for a free trial, go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card. You just want to try it out, start building a website, no strings attached. Then, if you decide to go ahead and purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR5. So that's SOCIALHOUR and then the number 5. And you get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about that free domain, the free domain that you get now. So that's the newest offering from Squarespace. We thank them again for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Wonderful service, squarespace.com. Offer code SOCIALHOUR5. All right. Amber, Twitter is always innovating. And so much so that sometimes I feel like it's hard to keep up. Their newest innovation is a little bit of an improvement to their Discover tab. Do you use the Discover tab on Twitter?
Well, I don't, actually. And when I read this article, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't even know about the Discover tab. So I don't think I have ever used it before. However, it looks, looks like an interesting way to discover new stories, particularly stories that are relevant to stuff that you care about and tweet about.
Yeah, the Discover tab, it's really funny. Okay, so anybody who watches iPad Today knows that I sort of had a dud of a segment in our most recent show. I think it was episode 96, last week's episode, because I was doing this like Twitter app roundup. And so I opened up my Twitter app on the iPad to show off the new Discover tab. And I was like, wait a second. Okay, they don't have the Discover tab on the iPad app, because the iPad app and the iPhone app are different, because they were both companies that were acquired. They started out as third-party apps. It wasn't the same team. And that in turn is different from Twitter's web experience. So anyway, the iPad app, it doesn't actually apply to the iPad app, which is kind of silly. But it does apply to the iPhone app, and I believe Android as well. And it definitely applies to Twitter web app. So if I'm looking at my Discover tab right now, and I'm at twitter.com, and I'm logged into my account, I see a bunch of stories that are relevant to me based on who's sharing them. Now, okay, why publishers don't like apps is the top story. I see a little blurb, the future of media and mobile devices isn't with applications, but with the web. Huh, okay. It's a story from Technology Review. I have the link there. But then if I hover over this little thumbnail here, I see that Jason Ponton, well, I think he's the one that wrote the story. Okay, so that's interesting. I don't believe I follow him on Twitter, so maybe enough of the people that I do follow also follows him. Then Apple releases iOS 5.1.1. That's interesting. And then here are all of the, I guess, tweets that shared that news. So this is, it's not totally dissimilar to how Discover already worked. But there seems to be just more context of why is this stuff floating to the top of my Discover area? Who's sharing it? And is it relevant to me? It gives just me a little bit more incentive to click on something if I know enough of my connections or brands that I care about are sharing this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the who to follow feature that they announced. I don't remember exactly when, but at first I thought I wouldn't really use it all the time. But now I find myself, I use it on a regular basis, especially because they do add, again, that kind of context of what other people follow, that person who are in your own network right now. So I think it's cool. I think it's a great little addition to Twitter. Really simple, really easy, and I think makes sense for a lot of users.
Yeah. There's also a tiny little bit of a wording change. Instead of, it used to be replies when you would see who was replying to you. Then it was mentions. Now it's called connect. So again, same idea. It's a little at sign. But now it says connect rather than replies or mentions. And then if I go ahead and click into that, I see interactions, which is not just people who have mentioned me, but a little bit of a back and forth. For example, you know, your tweet, Amber, that you sent out as we were starting the show. Or I can go ahead and just filter through just mentions, just responses to stuff that I had tweeted out initially. So again, little branding changes. Doesn't seem like it's changing how Twitter works all that significantly, but it's all, you know, for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. All right, Sarah, the next news item, which I also stumbled across last week about Digg's tech team heading for the Washington Post, possibly, and maybe Digg looking for a lifeline. I always get kind of sad when I hear news like this, you know, with services that maybe at one point I was on Digg all the time, and then you can sort of see them die off. But I guess it's good for the team that they're.
Yeah, it's hard to say, and I've had a lot of the same kind of conversations, Amber, where it's like, wow, you know, it's a really different world than it was when Digg was extremely innovative. It was the social network. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the place that you wanted to get on the front page of to get a lot of attention and response. And that momentum and that kind of meme type quality of stuff that we're seeing online has just shifted to other places, certainly Twitter. But I mean, Reddit has ended up being the more successful of the two. And I remember when Reddit came out, it felt like such a kind of less of a nicely designed ripoff. That was my first reaction was, oh, Reddit, it's like a wannabe Digg, got it. But over time, the Reddit community ended up seeming stronger and somehow more interesting, I guess. And Digg's seemed to have lost its way. I mean, They did some, I guess, what you would call pivots, or at least some controversial decisions on, you know, how to grow the company. And it does seem like it is being sold off for parts. That the tech team going to the Washington Post is like, wait, what? But Washington Post does have their social reader app. It's actually one of the more annoying apps I find on Facebook. But it is there. Yes, and it is, they're working on that. So I guess it's not that weird of a partnership, but the old days are gone, Amber. Old days of Digg are over.
It's sad. It is. Yeah, I know. It made me even sadder, though, when I did read the line that they could potentially be helping to beef up the Washington Post social reader app. Because like you, Sarah, I absolutely can't stand that. And I find it, like you said, one of the most annoying things on Facebook. And I think also, I don't know if I mentioned this or ranted about it before on the show, but I feel as though some users don't understand that when they're going through that app, that anything they read is going to be shared on their profile. I just feel like there's a it's not that clear, even though they sort of spell it out. But for a lot of users that maybe, you know, aren't that savvy and I don't know, not a fan of the app.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either. And I agree with you. It's like I'll end up clicking on stories because I'll see that, you know, my friend clicked on some story about you know, the 10 worst beach bodies or something that's like probably the most embarrassing one that you really didn't want going into everyone's news feeds.
Yeah.
But there it is. And then we're clicking on it because there's a little bit of a, well, Carrie read it. I guess I'll read it. That type of a thing. It's like, it's very manipulative. It's very worm-like.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things, too, when you're sitting on your computer and it's late at night and, you, like you said, you see your friend clicking on something that, you know, oftentimes you don't want your whole social network to maybe know that you clicked over to that article. Like, sometimes web surfing is a personal experience, right? And I think this app just takes that the privacy out of that. So I want it to explode. Maybe that was a little too forceful.
Hey, you're just being honest. That's how I feel just about 3D. Honest. Just explode it.
Down
in
with
2D.
3D and down with the Washington Post social reader app. All right, now that we have that figured out.
Moving on to our social tip of the week.
Yes. So I just stumbled across this service this morning on Mashable. It's called Huntsy, H-U-N-T-S-Y. Really cool idea. I don't think I've seen anything like this out there. But it's almost like a dashboard for your job search efforts. So a place where you can keep track of all those people that you contacted in your job search, all of the things that you have to do. I mean, Sarah, you know, when you're looking for a job, there's a lot of things you have to follow up. You have to update your resume. You know, you have to manage all your different networks. There's social integration as well. So you can make the most of your social networks and help get people's help who are in your social networks as far as spreading the word about your job hunt. So a fun little service.
Love it. Makes sense.
Real easy.
We all want to have the best job possible. So all of these tools that are at our disposal, the more you know about them, the more you can pick and choose the ones that are best for you and have a better presence online. Huntsy.
Yeah. Huntsy. Nice and easy. Sarah, I'm excited for your spotlight, your roundup that you mentioned that you were going to do last week. And good for you for following through.
Yes, I know. I actually left a note for myself because I'm very good at not remembering to do things that I say that I'm going to do. It's part of my whole, hey, look at me, I'm organized thing that I'm doing in my life these days. Like managing a calendar. I got 35 years strong without really having a calendar. And finally I realized I forget way too many things. And I'm disappointing people on a regular basis. I should probably get a calendar. So this is our spotlight this week. We did mention it last week. The Instagram for video roundup. And that's sort of a tongue-in-cheek, winky Instagram for video because, as we said last week, it's almost a lazy way to describe some of these services just because Instagram is one of those household names now because they sold to Facebook for $1 billion. However, some of these services are really interesting. And the three that we're going to talk about are SocialCam, Viddy, and Amber Tout, which is, you introduced that to me. I wasn't even familiar with it. But the three are extremely similar. Now, I'm running them on my iPad, but they're all iPhone apps, at least, you know, the app versions of them. I'm just running them on my iPad because I can blow them up a little bit bigger for our purposes. But it also requires me to hold my iPad in portrait mode, which is a little bit annoying. So this is SocialCam. This is a video that I had just taken earlier, and I added a silly filter and a little MTV-like title on this picture of my cat Lucy walking toward me. She comes when I call her. Oh, isn't that cute? So that's a video that I had uploaded fairly easily. And then it's just sort of in my stream. I've got another video a friend of mine had taken at a karaoke party. I will not play that because I know how people don't necessarily like their karaoke videos to be shared with the world. And here's something from the SocialCam staff, which I guess I'm probably following by default. A friend of mine had some sort of a fancy Friday type thing. So you see some comments. Some of the stuff 51 weeks ago, my gosh, 51 weeks ago, some of the stuff is pretty old. I have to start following some more people. That's the thing, is that I'm not really following that many people on SocialCam right now. Although they do want to push their featured users as much as possible. So I understand that somebody like Britney Spears is on. All right, I'll follow Britney Spears. You know, someone like Lupe Fiasco. Fiasco. God, I'm showing my age. And so you kind of, as you start scrolling through, you think, okay, well, there are a few names that I recognize, but they're kind of all seem celebrity-ish. Then these are people that I might know, I guess based on the fact that I used my Twitter credentials to log in. Indeed, I do know all these people. MGC, look, Apple expert. Did he write that in his own bio? My goodness. Yeah, so these are all friends of mine that I can go ahead and follow. And that would be, if I do decide to follow, that would end up in the video tab, which is everybody. I can also go to popular, and this is kind of where things get a little strange, because these are videos that are popular for whatever reason. So like a girl with a hula hoop, that's probably, all right, fine. So we'll go ahead and say, all right, well, what is this? And, you know, it's exactly what I thought it would be. It's okay, we only have like 8 seconds left. She seems very talented. All right, so that's that. I can go ahead and like it if I want to. I'm totally not going to do that, though, because everyone will think that that's a little bit strange. People driving, that seems pretty popular. So this is a little bit more of like that, I guess, like video wasteland kind of thing that I feel like a lot of these services have, where I do recognize Gary Vee. He's everywhere. But that's the idea with Social Cam. And then, of course, if I wanted to record a video right now, it's pretty easy to do. I have some filter options. So you kind of, I guess that's where it seems a little bit Instagram-ish. And I can go ahead and upload straight from here. What I don't like about Social Cam is that it really, really wants you to be posting stuff to Facebook. So, Amber, what we were complaining about as for the Washington Post social reader being very annoying, Social Cam, if you don't read your push notifications and your permissions really, really carefully, wants to share everything to your Facebook page or profile. And then if you are not already a Social Cam user and you click on one of my videos, you can't actually just watch it from Facebook. You have to sign up for Social Cam. They have experienced a crazy mushroom cloud kind of growth. I think they signed up like 4 million users in a week recently. And a bunch of people were saying, how is that happening? Wow, this is really catching on. I think it's because people are just signing up because they want to watch other people's videos.
Maybe.
So I don't think it's indicative of how many people really want to watch videos. So that's the issue I have with Social Cam, which is the same issue I have with a service called Viddy, which kind of has a nicer UI. It looks a little bit more professional, in my opinion, but it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, they even have a little film strip icon to show all the people that I'm following. iJustine is pretty much the only person I'm following that's posting videos regularly. But then I can see what's hot. So this is sort of that popular page. This is popular versus trending. So I guess what's popular, getting popular in a short amount of time, versus newest. And then people that I'm following, because I'm not really following anybody yet. This is my own account. I've got one follower. All right. I haven't uploaded any videos yet. But if I wanted to, again, I go ahead and unlock my camera here. And doesn't appear to give you actual filters, but you do have things like, you know, I guess that's flash, or adding a grid to kind of help you, I don't know, look at your horizon the right way type of a thing. So you have certain options as far as this goes. Oh, I see focus audio, or if you want to go 4:3 and take a video. So that's Viddy. Again, these guys are both free. At least they're free right now in the App Store. And then we've got Tout, Amber, that you introduced me to. And for whatever reason, I hadn't heard of it. I don't know why. But it appears to be almost a little bit more of a simplified UI as compared to the other two. So if I hit explore here, I can see videos from people that I'm following. I am following both you and Ayaz. So I see quite a few videos from you and Ayaz and Leo and my friend Ryan Lawler, who apparently made one video once. But then I can also go to the popular area. So this is, again, people I don't necessarily know. I do recognize her from a reality show. And there's Kat, and there's Shaquille O'Neal. I think that's him. And today's new content, I guess, if I just want to get what's fresh. So these all kind of feel like the same thing to me. If I go to some of the trending topics, it's like C-SPAN Tout. What? Well, it turns out that C-SPAN has an account on Tout. These companies all seem to have their own, like, here are our cool celebrity, you'll be impressed type of accounts on them. So, yeah, I added a little video of my cat here. No, this is another thing, Amber, that I don't want to just single out Social Cam as the only one that's annoying on Facebook, because I added this video of me holding my cat, Sam, and I went ahead and added it on Tout. And I thought I was pretty good about saying, no, I don't want to push it anywhere. I don't want to send it to Facebook. I don't want any of that stuff. However, if I go to my profile here, and I feel like I understand the way Facebook permissions work pretty well. Sure enough, the Sam Twist video ended up there. Now, that's okay, because it's not like I'm embarrassed about it. It's not like it's not the end of the world. But I don't feel like I told it to do that. I feel like it kind of just got there because, of course, Tout wants other people to say, ooh, what's Tout? Maybe I should sign up for an account because it's on Sarah's profile.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of companies know that if they get into those different platforms, then, like you said, they're going to have more people sign up. I used Tout, which allows you to do 15-second videos. I used it in a little chat that a magazine in New York was doing, and we basically did Tout messages back and forth. So that was kind of fun, just sort of a different way to have to conduct an interview. But I think with some of these video sharing apps, I don't know. I think it's tough. You know, you get a lot of really crappy video, right? You know, stuff that it just, when we have so much amazing video content that's being put out online, when people are shooting with these really amazing cameras and the quality's fantastic and the content's amazing. And then all of a sudden I see, you know, a 12-second snippet of content that, you know, the sound is terrible. And I just, it reminds me of the early days of YouTube, kind of.
Yeah.
Not in a good way.
I agree with you. A lot of this does seem kind of, it just seems collectively, it seems like, oh, there's just a lot of junk, right? I guess if you're in the business of curation, this might be a really fun project because it's kind of just a mishmash of stuff, especially if you're just looking like what just got updated in the last hour type thing. But to me, it's just a mess. And I do feel like to make the comparison to something like Instagram again, Instagram is about still images, and many apps are, you know, that are at all photography based are different than video. It's just there's much more of a, okay, I'm committed to pressing play. It's probably going to load for a few seconds because that's sort of the way that we're used to, you know, we're used to our devices having to process the video a little bit. And then the video could be anywhere from, you know, 10 seconds to a couple of minutes long. And you just don't know what you're getting into. You don't know what it's going to say. And I'm just usually inclined to be like, who's got the time? I can look at a picture scrolling by, like something here and there, little heart, little smiley face. But when it comes to video, I don't find catching up on videos, you know, in my social stream really something that I'm wanting to do on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of these services, they really need time to mature. You know, we saw this with Twitter. When Twitter first came out, 140 characters didn't seem like a lot of space to put anything that was meaningful. And obviously that has changed over the years, right? Some of my first tweets were random little things, random messages. The same thing happened to blogging. In the early days of blogging, people would write out what they ate for breakfast just because of the novelty of being able to share that on the internet.
Yeah.
And so I feel like these short snippets, these little video sharing services that you can do from use from your smartphone, they need time to mature. They need people to, you know, get better at producing good content. If there's great content there, like imagine if people start putting out, you know, little tips or little snippets of information that's really useful, like news or something along those lines. But right now we're so obsessed almost with the technology and the ability to do it, we lose our way with all of the content and the quality of what we're putting out there. So in a couple of years, hopefully we'll have a different conversation about these services.
Yeah, I think the big story right now is look at all these people who are signing up for these services. Well, when you dig into why people are signing up for, let's say, SocialCam, like 4 million people who signed up because they were trying to just see a video that someone else had posted on Facebook, that's not an engaged user. That's not really an incentivized anything. And then there's just kind of the novelty of, oh, yeah, it's the new thing. Most of these services just don't stick. That's the reality of it. That's why it's such a big deal when a company has crazy growth and then they, you know, go public or they sell to another company for a lot of money, because most companies just don't. And I have yet to see that perfect video program that seems like, oh, okay, the next really good video-based social network, you know, that isn't already YouTube. So I don't know. SocialCam, Vidi, and Tout, they all have good qualities. They all seem similar, though. They seem like, you know, pick your poison. It's all kind of the same thing. It's the video. It's the quality of the video content that you're sharing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, Sarah. So we've had the Twitter hashtag before. We've had the meme of the week. Now we have the Twitter rant. This is not a rant that I am doing, but if you remember a few months ago, we talked about media mogul Rupert Murdoch signing up for Twitter. It looks like he's in a little bit of hot water with some of his users and other people. He tweeted on May 5th that it seems impossible to have civilized debate on Twitter. Ignorant, vicious abuse lowers whole society, maybe shows real social decay. This potentially could be true, I guess, depending on how you look at Twitter. He has since sort of taken back some of those words. But it's funny because I'm looking through his Twitter feed and I sometimes feel like he's still learning the ropes as far as Twitter. You know, he'll often just tweet one word. Most recently, 23 minutes ago, he tweeted, I don't know what it is. It looks like an email address / Twitter handle. So I think he's just trying to figure out that environment a little bit. So maybe not be so hard on the guy. You know, it's a new environment for him. Nonetheless, he doesn't seem to be getting a ton of love there, although he has 234,000 followers.
I mean, he's one of the richest people in the world, right? A media mogul in every sense of the word. And he can't get like a good little tutorial. I don't know, Amber. I don't know if I feel that sorry for Rupert Murdoch.
I think I just feel sorry because he's in his 80s. And then I just don't want to discourage people who are, you know, of that age to start using these services. So I do agree with you. I feel like, oh, maybe he's just forgetting how he's supposed to use it. I don't know. He's like, I got it. It's like, I don't know, Sarah. You're right. You're right. I shouldn't apologize for him.
It is fascinating because you're like, okay, that's a weird tweet. He like pressed send too soon, or the email address doesn't really make sense. It's like, nobody's looking at this stuff. I mean, they're not being proofed. So in that sense, it's kind of fascinating because it's like, what will happen next type of a thing. And he's gotten in hot water before for saying things and then either having to retract or delete the tweet type of a thing. But we all know by now, maybe Rupert doesn't realize it yet. He probably prefers I call him Mr. Murdoch, that that even if a tweet is out there for like a tenth of a second before you regret it and delete it, someone somewhere will have grabbed a screen grab of it. So it's not good enough.
No. He should watch The Social Hour. I think he could learn from us, Sarah.
I agree. I hate having to delete tweets. And I really don't. It's not that I tweet out things that I guess I've regretted things that I've tweeted up before, but it's like, that's usually not the reason I'm deleting them. It's because I've misspelled something or I mistakenly sent it out before it was done. And I know that someone notices, you know, because they see it and then they're like, oh, it went away. Oh, there's the updated one that, you know, has the spelling fix or whatever. And it's just like, sorry.
Can I just tell you that is my favorite feature of Google Plus is the editing capabilities.
Me
you
know, just the too. Fact
it's awesome. I mean, now I go on Facebook and I'll quickly post something and I'm just wishing I could go back and edit it. So, you know, as far as us criticizing some of the things that they've done, good job on the editing option. That is a necessity.
Totally agree. Wouldn't it be nice if Twitter did the same thing? Maybe one day. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day. They might like the controversy, though, of people, mm-hmm. you know, and then the deleting. And then, yeah, it's just, it's good for gossip. All right, Amber, before we get to your rat or fad of the week, want to thank... Excuse me, I just had a bubble in my throat. Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Audible has nothing to do with the bubbles in my throat, by the way. That is all just biologically mine. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in audiobooks. And when I say leading, I mean that they have over 100,000 downloadable audiobook titles that span all types of literature, all genres, fiction, nonfiction. It's insane. I mean, if you can think of the book that you want to be read to you by either the author or a highly trained audiobook reader, I mean, some of the people who read audiobooks, like, that is their profession because they have really good voices. Audible.com is the place to go. Sometimes I just start looking through Audible and, like, I just want to have a book read to me that I might even necessarily not... I wouldn't even want to read it, but I like the idea of it being told to me because it uses different muscles in your brain, I guess, to be absorbing information. That's why I like talk radio so much, is because I end up getting smarter, hopefully, because of people who are interesting, have interesting stories to tell, whether it is, you know, like escapist kind of fiction stuff or actual like autobiographical stories that I'm not reading. And, it, you know, reading takes a lot of time, too. So there's that. Audible is great for a lot of people who wish that they were reading novels and said were able to say things like, oh, yeah, I read like 3 books a month. I would love to say that. That is just not the reality of my situation. But I end up hanging out in my car all the time, sitting in traffic. So why not actually get through those books that I'm just not reading by listening to them? It's the same information completely. What's cool about Audible is if you're not already a Audible subscriber, you can go ahead and sign up for an account and get a free audiobook of your choice. What Audible ends up doing is giving you a credit. So you use that credit towards any book you like. There are a few books, usually the really popular ones, Game of Thrones in that series is an example of a 2-credit book. So this offer would be for a 1-credit book. So keep that in mind. But for the most part, most of that 100,000 in the library is good for the credit. So you go ahead, download an audiobook, and get a sense of how audiobooks work. They're really cool. And again, if you're a busy person and you have time to listen, but you don't necessarily have time to read, you know, your eyes get tired at the end of the day, I really do have that problem. Audible.com is a great way to go. So if you want that free audiobook, audiblepodcast.com/social hour. So I'll say that one more time. audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Get that free book. Let us know which one you picked and if you liked it or not, because we could always use tips. I'm in the market for something new that I want to listen to rather than not read. Amber, that goes for you too. If you have anything that you think I can't live without reading audibly. And thank you to Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just got an email from Audible where they were promoting some great books for Mother's Day and how that would be a great gift for your mom to be able to get her an Audible account and a free book. And they had some suggestions. So since Mother's Day is this Sunday, that's another reason to use our promo code. So perhaps you can take advantage of that.
That's a really good idea. I wonder what my mom would want to listen to. My mom would love Audible. Gosh, I don't even know why I haven't hooked her up yet. Mom, if you're listening, surprise. Happy early Mother's Day. Thank you. audiblepodcast.com/social hour. And now to the moment everyone has been waiting for, Amber's Rad or Fad.
All right. So this is not a product. It is not a service. Instead, it is a person. I read about this on CNN this morning about a senior editor at the tech news site, The Verge. His name is Paul Miller. I don't know him, but apparently he just gave up the internet. So he is not using the internet for 1 year. He has decided that there are some major advantages for being more connected in his life without using technology. The reason I put this into Rad or Fad, Sarah, is that I feel like I've seen people do this so many times before. I don't know if you know this guy, but it seems a bit like a publicity stunt. And I guess a lot of people have sort of come out to say the same thing on sites like Reddit. I just don't get it. You know, I see having balance in our lives, but this guy's a tech editor. I don't know how well that fares for his job.
Yeah. When I first saw this article, and it was sort of his farewell post, you know, I'm leaving the internet for a year. It's like, wait, why? What? Why would you do that? I understand his motivations. He had some reasoning that I can definitely identify with, feeling that he doesn't really have the perspective that we all used to have of some sort of being a little bit more disconnected from something and be able to observe things a little bit differently, because you just your behavior changes when you are on the internet all the time. It doesn't mean it's better or worse. And I don't think this is Paul Miller's way of saying, I need to be off the internet for a year because somehow it's, you know, better if we can prove that we can't do it. But can I do this? And I think he said, I think I can, but if I fail, then that will be the story, is that I can't stay off of the internet for 365 days. What's especially weird about this is, you know, there are probably people who are watching or listening to us who say, I know people who aren't on the internet. They're fine. I mean, he's not the first person to do this, but he is a tech blogger.
Yeah.
I mean, this is his livelihood. So, this is a project that is extremely, probably unpleasant and uncomfortable, not just based on his habits, but based on what he has to do for work. He has to now, he will still be writing articles for The Verge, but he has to submit them, I think, on USB stick and then give them to an editor. And then the editor would then upload to the internet because, of course, Paul can't have any tools to be able to do stuff like that. So it's a very lofty goal. It does feel to me like, I don't know that it's a stunt, because I think that he is taking it seriously, but it does seem like a little bit of a gimmick, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you could probably figure this out in, 30 days? The year? Does it really need to be a year? Or is that just kind of look better on the headline? But then again, maybe 30 days isn't so hard. A year clearly would be.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. And I think it's, I always have, not that I have problems with this, hey, if he wants to do it, go ahead. But I always worry a little bit. I know he's still writing and everything, but it reminds me somewhat of some of these campaigns I've seen. I think there's one coming up for Mother's Day, and it talks about being silent for Mother's Day or being silent on Twitter for a certain day. I feel like there's so many voices that need to be heard in our world, and we have the freedom to be able to talk and share and communicate, that when someone steps away like this, I don't know if I'm sure he has fans and people who love what he does, but I he's just going to be entirely disconnected. So based on his job, it just seems like, I don't know, I don't think it's so rad. I'm not going to call it a fad, because I don't think everybody's going to do it, but I don't think it's I don't know if he's going to make it, Sarah.
I don't think it's rad either, because I think if I didn't have the internet for a year, I love the idea of saying I'm not a slave to this technology, right? But I don't think I would enjoy not being on the internet for a year at all. And by the way, a few people in our chat room are, kind of making jokes like, he should not even use the USB stick. He could, handwrite his blog posts and send them through the U.S. Postal Service or something like that. Keep in mind that there are all sorts of, gadgets and use of technology that he can take advantage of. He just can't be connected to the internet. So as someone noted in chat, an iPad in airplane mode, that's fine. You're never going to be able to update those apps, because that would require paying the App Store and downloading something. But this as its own, not connected to the internet in any way, I can play games, I can make artwork. There's stuff that I can do. It just can't leave my device. I guess I could connect it through USB to iTunes so I could transfer it, but I still can't share it with anybody, because, again, that's the internet. So it's complicated. And you think, you could still use an iPad. Geez, how hard could that be? But think of all of the apps that are, part of their allure is that you can share and they're very social. And it's fascinating.
In the article, when they say if he needs to look up a phone number, he'll just get on the phone and start calling people, and hopefully he'll find someone who knows the person he's trying to reach. There are some benefits of technology, and one of them is that you don't have to do stupid things like that.
Right.
There's so many parts of it that, just seem more gimmicky as I read more about it, and, disconnect, I think, for your health if you feel like you need that. But to turn it into this, long, complex, stupid way of doing things is just a little much.
Yeah, I don't think it's rad either. I wonder if Paul Miller, who, it's funny. It's like, I think, what if he was listening to us? But he can't. Unless he's cheating. Unless he's cheating or somebody tells him about the show.
Could he come on the show, though? No, he couldn't. He couldn't connect.
No, he could show up in person, I guess, and say that he's talking to me, and whatever we're doing with that information is out of his hands. But I don't think, because then he'd be talking to you too, and that's clearly via Skype, so he can't.
So we could interview him, but I couldn't talk to him. Well,
that's
based on what I just said about his little game, maybe he wouldn't want to talk anyway.
Exactly. Paul Miller, Amber has submitted her next question, and that question is, be quiet, Amber. That would be so strange. I think maybe he'll come out of all of this and he'll be like, tech writing is for the birds. I've totally understood the meaning of life. I'm going to go live internet free in a gated community of internet haters somewhere. Maybe he'll do that. I don't know. But I doubt it. I think he'll probably be relieved when this is all over. And I'll be surprised if he makes it all the way through.
I will too. He's cheating right now, sir.
You're so cheating, Paul. You're so listening to us. It's so obvious. All right, Amber, we have come to the end of our hour. In fact, we went a little bit long today. That is it. We just had a lot of good content, and we didn't want to leave anything out. So reminder to everybody who watches us. Well, thank you to everybody who watches us live. Reminder to everybody who hasn't. We are live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Please watch us live if you can. Otherwise, our website is twit.tv/TSH. Where all of our shows and episodes and iTunes links and links to subscribe to the show, all of that lives there. You can find us in iTunes as well. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.